Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, Text number 8. Shut, hunger. Trit, thirst. Tridhatubhi, three humors, namely mucus, bile, and wind. Imaha, all of them. Muhu, always. Ardyamanaha, perplexed. Shita, winter. Ushna, summer. Vata, wind. Varashai, by rains. Itara itarat, and many other disturbances. Cha, also. Kama agnina, by strong sex urges. Achyuta rusha, indefatigable anger. Cha, also. Sudur bharena, most unbearable. Sampashyataha, so observing. Manaha, mind. Urukrama, O great actor. Siddhate, becomes despondent. Me, my. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Translation and purport. O great actor, my Lord, all these poor creatures are constantly perplexed by hunger, thirst, severe cold, secretion, and bile, attacked by coughing winter, blasting summer, rains, and many other disturbing elements, and overwhelmed by strong sex urges and indefatigable anger. I take pity on them and I'm very much grieved for them. Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord like Brahma and persons in his disciplic succession are always unhappy to see the perplexities of the conditioned souls who are suffering the onslaughts of the threefold miseries which pertain to the body and mind, to the disturbances of material nature, and to many other such material disadvantages. Not knowing adequate measures for relieving such difficulties, suffering persons sometimes pose themselves as leaders of the people, and the unfortunate followers are put into further disadvantages under so-called leadership. This is like a blind man's leading another blind man to fall into a ditch. Therefore, unless the devotees of the Lord take pity on them and teach them the right path, their lives are hopeless failures. The devotees of the Lord who voluntarily take the responsibility of raising the foolish, materialistic sense enjoyers are as confidential to the Lord as Lord Brahma. Quite a big statement there. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachanam Pangum Nangayate Gurim Yat Kripa Tamam Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm sitting here today. I know many of you were expecting to hear from Maharaj, and I see many regular faces, but I'm seeing some new faces also. So I can assume you came to hear Maharaj, but sorry to disappoint you. I'm sitting here. So I'll try my best to serve you. So here, Lord Brahma is making some prayers to the Supreme Lord. And here, I'll just read this verse one more time. O great actor, my Lord, All these poor creatures are constantly perplexed by hunger, thirst, severe cold, secretion and bile, attacked by coughing winter, blasting summer, rains and many other disturbing elements, and overwhelmed by strong sex urges and indefatigable anger. I take pity on them and I'm very much aggrieved for them. So here Lord Brahma is feeling very compassionate for the living entities in this world who are suffering the threefold miseries. So we all know the threefold miseries, what they are, and they are even outlined in the purport. Miseries caused by the body and mind, by higher living entities, and what's the other one? And by nature. Thank you. So yeah, by nature is higher living entities, and by the body and mind, and by other living entities in this world. So we see each and every living entity in this material world is suffering the threefold miseries. And this verse here, more or less, is describing the threefold miseries. So we can see, like hunger, thirst, these are miseries inflicted by our own body. Right? Then severe cold, blasting summer, winter, rains. These are miseries caused by nature. Then sex urge is anger. Sometimes people provoke us, you know, living entities provoke us, or certain living entities will just do something which they ordinarily do, but it causes us great inconvenience. So that sometimes gives rise to anger. And it's interesting, it says indefatigable anger. Do you know the meaning of indefatigable? Can't be defeated. Means tireless. Tirelessly. So, tireless anger. In other words, it's again and again, it's inflicted upon us. So Lord Brahma is feeling pity for people who are inflicted by these miseries. So if we analyze the state of affairs in the material world, that's each and every living entity. There's no one exempt from these miseries, whether in the human form of life, or in the animal species, or in any other species. We even see in the higher planetary systems, in the planets of the demigods, they are also inflicted by miseries. Their miseries are of a different nature. They are more inflicted by envy, jealousy, maybe not so much gross material miseries, but still they are inflicted by miseries. But we are situated on the earthly planet, which is not up there, not down there. So here there is mixed happiness and distress. But the point is, everyone is inflicted by material miseries and everyone is suffering material miseries. And Lord Brahma, he is feeling very sorry for them, sorry for us, actually. For us, we should not say them, for us. He's feeling sorry for us because we are suffering so much, and the thing is, we don't even realize we are suffering. That's why he's even feeling more sorry, because we are thinking that we are actually doing okay. It's not too bad. So it says, a pure devotee of the Lord like Brahma and persons in his disciplic succession are always unhappy to see the perplexities of the conditioned souls. So they're not unhappy just once or here and there, but as Prabhupada is saying, they're always unhappy. So does that mean a devotee is always unhappy? They always the devotees are happy and unhappy. So we see, like Prahlad Maharaj, his famous prayer. He said, I'm happy because I'm constantly glorifying the Lord and I'm absorbed in thoughts of the Lord. So but I'm also unhappy because to see the suffering conditions of the living entities in this world. So the unhappiness of the devotees of the Lord is not like cannot be compared to the unhappiness of the conditioned souls. So conditioned souls are happy and unhappy in relationship to material pleasure and suffering. So Prahlad Maharaji analyzes the state of affairs of living entities in this world. They're always trying to achieve, they're basically two types of actions. They're trying to achieve happiness, they're engaging in activities to achieve happiness, and then they're engaging in activities to avoid distress. So they're engaging in two types of activities. Because the nature of this world, as Krishna says, is dukhalyam ashashvatam. You know, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he, you buy a product, it comes with the PDS, product disclosure statement. Whenever you're signing some deal, or there's T&Cs, there's terms and conditions, and they say PDS, product disclosure statement. So this is the fine print. So whatever you're buying, there's a fine print, and we usually just sign it without reading the fine print. So Bhagavad Gita is like the fine print, and it's not like in small letters, it is quite in big letters. So Krishna very, not only in one place he says, but he says in few places in Bhagavad Gita, or many places, that the nature of this world, it is dukhalyam ashashvatam. Maam upetya punarjanma dukhalyam ashashvatam. So this world is temporary, and it is full of misery. It's not a little bit. Krishna says it is full of misery. But we tend to ignore that statement, what Krishna is saying, or we don't take it too seriously. But there Krishna is saying this material world is full of misery. But we think it's not too bad. You know, there are some problems, but it's not too bad because we can overcome them. But the very nature of this world is a place of struggle for existence. We are constantly struggling to maintain ourselves, right? We are always struggling. Just like right now, winter is approaching, so we all are wearing warm clothes. We're wearing beanies, jackets, socks, maybe scarves, thermals, gloves. So why are we wearing this? Because we are we want to avoid distress. If we don't wear, we will be suffering. So then, even in wearing, excuse me, like coughing winter, and I'm coughing right now. So we are, you know, coughing in winter time. We are sneezing because we are unable to regulate the temperature of the body. So this is struggle for existence. Then in summertime, we are trying to get rid of heat, as it's mentioned here, blasting summer. So we have air conditioners, coolers, and the cars are air conditioned, they're heated in winter. Even on motorcycles, people have these heated grips so they can avoid the suffering in the winter. The gloves are not enough, it gets so cold. So there's heated grips so your hands can feel warm. And then we are afflicted by hunger, thirst, right? Every 3 hours, we are thinking of food. Every 3 or 4 hours, there's arrangements being made of food. Either we are cooking ourselves, or someone else is cooking for us, or either we are in the form of going to a restaurant and buying a meal, or even coming to temple, and right now somebody is cooking for us. So because we are afflicted by hunger and thirst, we feel thirsty if we don't take enough liquids, then we feel thirsty. So we are afflicted by all these things. Then it is said here, Tridhatubhir, right? Our body is made up of mucus, bile, and air. So when these three things are not in balance, then we fall sick. So Ayurveda is about keeping them in sync, in balance. And then overwhelmed by strong sex urges. So in the material world, this is the strongest urge in the material world, the sex urge. And every living entity is afflicted by it. And in fact, that is the impetus for material life. So because of people are so strongly afflicted by the sex urge. And they cannot control themselves. Even so many great, great leaders, politicians, from the great persons to the ordinary person, to the insignificant, everyone is afflicted by this urge. Especially we see when puberty strikes. Till then, we're not so much afflicted by it. But when the hormones change, puberty afflicts us, then we are suddenly the opposite sex becomes very attractive to us. So this is the arrangement of material nature in which we are inflicted. We did not want that, but it was enforced upon us. When age 12, 13, 14 comes, the body changes, and then suddenly we are attracted. And then people, they cannot think very clearly. And even in, we see so many, whether people are at work or they're going to the gym, you know, so much of the motivation is to start a relationship with the opposite sex. That's going on in the back of the mind. And they want to enjoy the physical body as well. So we see we are inflicted by these very strong urges. And then anger. Anger is also natural in this world because when our desires are not fulfilled, they lead to anger. So when our material desires can never be fulfilled, so sooner or later it will lead to anger. If they are fulfilled, it will lead to greed. And because greed cannot be satisfied, then it will lead to anger. So sooner or later we have to come there. We will become angry. And people, not everyone in this world will cooperate with us. You know, we'll do things the way we want to do. So that's just the nature of this world. Then we become very angry. But people think that, you know, that's just part of life. All these things are part of life and you have to learn to live with it. So it's not too bad. That's what people think. These things, okay, we can wear jumpers, we can arrange by advancement of civilization, we can counteract these things. That's what Prahlad Maharaj says. You know, living entities are engaging in two types of activities, trying to achieve happiness and trying to get rid of distress. So because to some degree we are able to get rid of distress, then people think that this world is not too bad. It's not such a bad place after all. And we can just adjust things and be happy. But as Lord Brahma here is saying that he takes pity on them because devotees have higher knowledge. So one of the qualities of devotees is they are very compassionate. So pure devotees are very, very compassionate because the Supreme Lord is compassionate. So Krishna, Krishna is very, very compassionate, and that's why he comes down to the material world to give living entities real knowledge, to liberate them from their suffering. That's why the Supreme Lord, he comes to the material world once in a day of Brahma. And we see even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are two reasons for his coming to this material world. There's the internal reason and there's the external reason. So the external reason is to propagate the Yuga Dharma and to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. So we should not think that is just a very insignificant reason. You know, the internal reason we should be more absorbed in the internal reason. Yeah, we need to understand both. But the external reason is also very important. And we need to follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appeared to engage in the Yoga Dharma and to liberate the living entities. So we see even Advaita Acharya, when he saw the fallen condition, the fallen condition of the living entities in this world, who were engaged in wasting their time and in so many different ways. He felt very sorry for them. So then he invoked the presence of the Lord. He was very instrumental in the descent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we can see Advaita Acharya was very, very compassionate for the fallen living entities. And of course, the internal reason why the Lord appears is to give pleasure to his devotees. So, you know, killing the demons can be done by material nature. That for that, the Lord doesn't have to come. So he comes mainly to give pleasure to his devotees, but also to liberate the suffering living entities, which is us. So we see here Lord Brahma, he is also very compassionate because he's in the disciplic succession of the Lord. So the family business, as Srila Prabhupada would put it many times, the family business of the Krishna consciousness movement is preaching. That's our family business. So we see, like, you know, there are so many families which run businesses. And, you know, if you go back generations and generations, everyone has been engaged in the same business. And many more generations to come forward, they will be engaged in the same business. Whether it is carpentry or a locksmith or education or whatever. These days that's breaking down, but, you know, like you can see, like, in AP Sons and Co. So that's a family business. So the family business in the Krishna consciousness movement is preaching the glories of the Lord. That's the family business. Because the father, the Supreme Lord Krishna, he started this business. He started this business by he created this material world and he came down. And in the disciplic succession, everyone has been engaged in more or less, it has been engaged in that business. So we can see Brahma, he's also taking pity on us. And that's why he's thinking like this. He's feeling unhappiness. We even see the sages of Naimisharanya in the first canto. The first canto opens up with the sages of Naimisharanya performing a 1,000-year sacrifice. So they were performing that 1,000-year sacrifice for the pleasure of the Lord and his devotees. And also for the benefit of the conditioned living entities, because they could foresee, they could see that in Kali Yuga everyone is suffering the threefold miseries. So the people are thinking that people are taking distress to be happiness. So because they're suffering the threefold miseries, and therefore they were performing a 1,000-year-old sacrifice to counteract the miseries and for the deliverance of the residents of Kali Yuga. And we also see Vyasadeva, he compiled the Vedas and the Srimad Bhagavatam out of compassion for the gross materialists. So with his vision, he could foresee the conditions of Kali Yuga. So he compiled all the Shastras. We see even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he opened the Gaudiya Math and he opened so many centers in India out of compassion for people. Because generally sadhus, they hide in the Himalayas. Generally sadhus, they don't want to be disturbed by others. And they are only interested in their own spiritual welfare. So they hide in the Himalayas because Himalayas is a place very conducive for spiritual life. It's very tranquil and not much disturbance. There's rivers flowing, there's natural food. So they hide there and they engage in their own spiritual advancement. But Prahlad Maharaj, he says that devotees, they live in cities and they open preaching centers to invite people to hear about Krishna, because that's where most of the people are, not in the forests. Forests, a few people are there. But most of the people are in the cities. They are engaged in very materialistic pursuits in the cities. So that's where we can make devotees, most devotees. That's where we were. If, I don't know if any of you were in a forest. Some devotee had to find you in a forest. So we were in cities, and devotees, they came to us, and they approached us, and they have engaged us in the process of Krishna consciousness. So there's this very famous prayer of Prahlad Maharaj. Even Maharaj, he quoted this verse yesterday. Nai vod vije para duratyaya vaitaranyas tvadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chittaha soche tato vimukha chetasa indriyartha maya sukhaya bharam udvahato vimuran. So here Prahlad Maharaj says, O best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So here Prahlad Maharaj says, the fools and rascals, they are engaged in making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies and countries. So we can see in this world, people are engaged in making very, very elaborate plans for happiness. We have the opportunity to go to some of these big music festivals to distribute prasadam. So we can see there, they make very elaborate plans for happiness. They go take so many, they go through so much endeavor and pain to set up this whole music festival. They put the toilets there, there's the, you know, put a whole music stage there. There's so many volunteers, the tents, electricity. In the middle of nowhere, they create this wonderful facility. And it's quite, you know, it's quite amazing what they do. And it is so sophisticated, and the management is so good. Everything goes on so smoothly. But it's all for very, for tiny material happiness. And the result of that is, at the end of it, people are miserable. People, they lose their wallets, they are so drunk, they are throwing up, they're lying on the ground, they're sitting in rubbish. And the end result is they are just suffering. And their happiness is they come to devotees and have some prasadam. So we can see that they're engaging in elaborate plans for happiness, but the end result is it is only suffering. So here Prabhupada, further on in the purport, he says, not knowing adequate measures for relieving such difficulties, suffering persons sometimes pose themselves as leaders of the people, and the unfortunate followers are put into further disadvantages under so-called leadership. This is like a blind man's leading another blind man to fall into a ditch. So we can see that our political leaders, social leaders, economic leaders, cultural leaders, in so many ways they are trying to overcome the laws of nature or the miseries of this world in various ways. And they're giving people so many false promises. You know, you elect me, I will do such and such things. I will improve the world in such and such way. We will overcome this problem. And we see even our scientific leaders, they are simply signing blank checks, as Prabhupada would put it. They are signing blank checks and giving to people, saying one day we will overcome death. One day we will stop old age. One day we will stop disease. But the fact of the matter is, we cannot overcome these things because we are not the doers. As Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Prakrite Gunai Karmani Sarvasha Ahankar Vimur Atma Kartaham Iti Manyate. So Krishna says in the third chapter of Gita that that we are not the doers because The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. So because people are thinking they are the doer, so therefore they think they can, because they are the doer, they can overcome nature. Because after all, they are in complete control. And one day they can overcome nature by advancement of technology and science. But that is just like signing a blank check. It's not possible. Because material nature is much stronger than us. We are just a jiva. We are insignificant jiva, very tiny. And material nature is, Krishna says, Daivi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya. So Krishna says, if we want to cross over material energy, then we have to surrender unto Krishna. Then we can cross over material energy. Then we can overcome the three modes of nature. But without surrendering to Krishna, overcoming the three modes of nature is impossible. So our leaders who are giving people false promises that they can overcome the laws of nature, that's like a blind man leading another blind man, as Prabhupada points out here. Because when a blind person is leading another blind person, the result is they both will be lost. And especially if they're walking in a hilly area, then there are very high chances they'll end up falling in a ditch or they'll go off the cliff. Or if two blind men are walking and they happen to cross the road, they could be run over by a car. So the result of a blind person leading another blind is just disaster. In other words, it is disaster. So very disaster is around the corner. So because our scientists, our political leaders, social leaders, cultural leaders, economic leaders, they don't know the science of Krishna consciousness, so they cannot solve the problems of the world. In fact, they're increasing the problems of the world. By their solutions, they are only increasing the problems. Just thinking of an example of how our leaders are increasing the problems. Yeah, very common example, just to overcome the traffic congestion, they build more and more roads, but the result is more and more cars go on the road, and there's more and more pollution, and the traffic is still the same, after spending, you know, millions and billions of dollars. You can see the Westgate is it's the same, the M1 is the same, you know, they build all these roads, and still it's a problem. So, you know, the solutions to material problems, they lead to more problems. So there's only spiritual solutions to material problems. And Prahlad Maharaj, he says, Maya Sukhaya Bharam Udvahato Vimuran. So Krishna also uses this word Mura in the Bhagavad Gita. And it translates to rascal. You know, Prabhupada says many times, you know, rascals. So it's actually coming from Bhagavad Gita. Rascal means mura. So mura means, or rascal means a fool. So here Prahlad Maharaj, he uses the word vimura. He adds the prefix vi. So vi means a maha fool or a great fool or super fool. So why is he saying super fool? Because, and the reason for that, which Prabhupada, he mentioned in the purport, is, I'll read it out to you. Although all materialists are baffled in their plans, they try again and again to become happy in this material world. Therefore, they have been described as vimura, or first-class fools. So in other words, though attempts for material happiness, they lead to distress again and again. Punna, punas charvita charvananam, chewing the chewed. Though attempts for material happiness lead to distress again and again, still we are trying again and again. Still, because we cannot see that, and we are trying again and again, we have been described as vimura. So that this to become convinced that this world is a place of suffering is it takes a great deal of spiritual advancement. Even as devotees, we can be struggling with this point for many, many years. Because as His Holiness Bhaktirasamrita Maharaj was mentioning last night in Urban Yoga, that we have been struggling in this material world for countless lifetimes. And to undo all that, we have to be very patient. It can take many years. You know, 5 years, 10 years of practice is nothing. We have to be engaged in a lifetime of practice, he was mentioning. Then we can, you know, overcome this. Because even as devotees, we are thinking, we can be happy if I, by doing this or getting a better job, I do this, do that, make more money. After all, Melbourne is not such a bad city. You know, Radha Vallabha temple is there. The city is not too bad. After all, it's been rated as the world's best livable city. So it can't be too bad. The materialists have rated it as the best city in the world to live as. So how can it be bad? But it is, as it's said here, it is a material world is a problem. Whether it's Melbourne or Toronto or Punjab or Mumbai or wherever. Even in, devotees say, you know, I'm from Mumbai, such a nice city. My country is Russia. In Russia, it is like this. Such a nice place. So because we identify with our place of birth very strongly, so we think it's a very nice place. But the reality is material world is not our home. The spiritual world is our home. And our home is this temple. This temple is our home. Because this temple is Vrindavan. This is the spiritual world. So then Prabhupada says, the devotees of the Lord who voluntarily take the responsibility of raising the foolish materialistic sense and joys are as confidential to the Lord as Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is very confidential to the Lord because he is engaging in the mission of the Lord. And we hear in the second canto, we heard in the second canto, the Lord, he shook hands with Lord Brahma. Remember that in this, before the Chaturshloki, when Lord Brahma had darshan of the Lord, so they shook hands. It is described in the Bhagavatam. So the Lord shaking hands with someone means they're very confidential, because Lord Brahma is engaged in a very confidential service. He's on behalf of the Lord. He's engaged in the creation of the material world. He's giving conditioned souls an opportunity to carry out their so-called desires, and to give them a chance to go back to Godhead. And Lord Brahma is also the Adi Guru of our sampradaya. So he's very, that's why he's very confidential. But it is said that anyone who is voluntarily takes the responsibility of raising the foolish materialistic sense enjoyers are also as confidential. So it's amazing, Prabhupada is giving this benediction here, that whoever engages in preaching, in the preaching work of Krishna consciousness, they can become as confidential as Lord Brahma. And this is not an understatement here. This is Prabhupada writing. So these are Prabhupada's words. So whoever engages in preaching Krishna consciousness without any material motivation, so we know the primary characteristics of bhakti is that the activity has to be engaged, it has to be an activity for the pleasure of the Lord, and it has to be an activity and it has to be carried out with a favorable intent. But the secondary characteristic is that it has to be free of any material desires and free from philosophical speculation. So jnana karmadi anavritam. So when one is very selflessly engaged in preaching work, they will become as dear as Lord Brahma. So we simply have to be engaged under the direction of our spiritual master. So our spiritual masters, they are just engaged in preaching. And Prabhupada, he created this movement for preaching. Nothing else. The purpose of ISKCON is to preach. Whatever service we are doing ultimately is for preaching. So if we are engaged in the under the order of our spiritual masters, then in preaching Krishna consciousness without any motivation, and that means taking inconveniences, because preaching means to accept voluntary inconvenience. So preaching is not, in preaching you cannot be in your comfort zone. If you are in your comfort zone, that means we are too comfortable and we are not really pushing ourselves. So when we are preaching, we are out of our comfort zone. Because preaching will put you out of your comfort zone. There is voluntary inconvenience. In other words, late nights, putting up with people, listening to what they have to say, you might not agree with them. Preaching to people, meeting people who you would ordinarily not even come across. Right? So generally we like to hang out in our own groups, in our own ethnic backgrounds, but then you have to come across people who are of a different background. People in different mental states. So preaching means to come out, and then even you have to shed, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, to make one devotee means to shed tons and tons of blood. Then you make one devotee. And then even to maintain them as a devotee, that they carry on as a devotee for the rest of their life. So all that takes great effort. But this is very rewarding. The benefits outweigh the inconvenience. So the benefits are far more. So the benefit is one will become very confidential to the Lord. And even Krishna, he says that in the end of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, whoever gives this knowledge to, whoever speaks this Bhagavad Gita to other devotees, they will become very dear to me. So he gives that benediction. So we just have to follow in the footsteps of great Mahajans, like Prahlad Maharaj, all the previous Acharyas, Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual masters. And then we will also become dear, because we are assisting them. On our own, we cannot become dear to the Lord, but because they are dear to the Supreme Lord, and we are assisting them as an instrument. Even we see Rupa Goswami in his Mangala Charana, Charana to the Nectar of Devotion, or to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says that in the fifth or sixth verse of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he writes that, I'm just an instrument. I'm not a great preacher. I'm just an instrument to the previous acharyas, and through me they are acting. So that is the proper mood to engage in preaching activities. So we'll leave it there and see if you have any comments or questions on this subject matter and verse. Yes. To my understanding, Brahma is a pure devotee, and he's free from the threefold miseries, you say?
Yeah,
he's free. But he comes in contact with the mode of passion. So his service is to create this world. So then he has to deal with the mode of passion in order to create. But he's above, because he's a pure devotee. Our Brahma is a pure devotee. So whoever is a pure devotee, they're free from suffering. The miseries come of this world. The miseries even a pure devotee experiences, but they don't suffer. So like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, externally he was in great misery. You know, he had cancer spread all over the body. But he was not suffering, because he was not identifying with the body. So pure devotees don't suffer, though they undergo misery. sure. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, so question is, Krishna says we are not the doer, but we can see we are doing so many things, like we are lifting our hand and doing things with the body, right? So it seems like we are the doer. Correct? Is that your question? Yeah, Krishna, he explains this point in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There, he says, according to the Vedanta, there are five causes for the accomplishment of all action. Now learn of these from me. So, yes, we are not the doer, as mentioned in the 3rd chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So he says, the place of action, the body, the performer, which is us, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul. These are the five factors of action. So for any activity to take place, there are five factors, right? There's your body, there's the endeavor, there's the senses, there's us, and ultimately there's the super soul. So in other words, when we want to perform any activity, even with the blinking of our eyes or moving a hand, we desire that. This happens very fast. We desire that activity, and the super soul, he sanctions it. So without the sanction of the super soul, it cannot happen. So because here it says, ultimately the super soul. These are the five factors of action. So any action has to be sanctioned by the super soul to take place. Otherwise it cannot take place. So there's a saying, man proposes and God disposes. So we are desiring, you know, we want to act like this, we want to achieve this, we want to achieve that. Then the super soul, according to a karma, he sanctions or does not sanction. So we can see some people, they cannot even lift their hand. Have you seen? They're so sick, they cannot lift their hand. So the super soul is not allowing that. And to get more technical, even they are demigods who are controlling different body parts. So, you know, the super soul works through them, through material nature, the demigods who are controlling. So ultimately it's the super soul. Yes. Such as? Yeah, and any activity which happens is with the sanction of the super soul. So the super soul, whether one is a rapist or a criminal or, you know, a materially nice person, whatever activity they're engaging in, yes, ultimately there's the sanction of the super soul. But Krishna, as the super soul, he doesn't interfere in our material activities. It is said that the super soul is situated in the body. The example is given of, there are two birds on a tree. One bird is engaging in enjoying the fruits of the tree, and the other bird is simply witnessing. So the super soul is seated in the hearts of all living entities, but the super soul is neutral, right? He's simply the witness and the sanctioner of all activities. But when someone becomes a devotee, then the super soul, they guides us through the spiritual master. So because, you know, we have decided to come in this material world, then we have to take responsibility of that. So it might sound like the super soul is very cruel and very insensitive. He's even sanctioning all the crime. But it might be the other person's karma also to get robbed. So, you know, any happiness or distress which we undergo is because of a karma. So if someone goes through a major tragedy in life or, you know, any suffering, that's because of the karma. So if someone, you know, someone's gone through some very terrible suffering, that's the karma in life. So the super soul has sanction for the person who has committed the crime and for those who have been undergone. Of course, the details are not there, what type of suffering they'll undergo, but of course, the Supreme Lord knows, but we don't know. But the point is, happiness and distress will come. What shape it takes, we don't know. It could be this shape, it could be that shape. What's the question? It's a comment or question? Yeah, from the perspective of the person undergoing happiness and distress, it is their karma. But we have, at the same time, we have free will. So, for example, someone's karma could be they win $10,000 or $1,000,000. Now what they do with that is the free will. They could use that money in very sinful activities, or they could use it in transcendental activities also. And so that's their free will. But generally, Prahlad Maharaj says, It's a difficult point to understand, that the happiness and distress of every living entity is predetermined. It is fixed. So he says there's no point trying to change it. So if we are trying to change it, then we are thinking we are the doer. The amount. That's why astrology is there. People, you can read your chart and figure out how much, what's your karma basically. So we can endeavor in some ways to avoid distress. Okay, we can avoid distress, but that distress will come in another way. So we don't know what shape or form it will take, but it will come. Similarly, happiness will come. We can try to strive for so much happiness, but we will get our quota only. Like some people, they strive so hard to make so much money. Yes, they make money, but then the distress comes in another way, and they experience distress despite having so much money. So the happiness and distress is predetermined for every living entity. So what shape and form it takes, we don't know. But in between that happiness and distress, we have the free will to choose our actions, to make our future bodies. That much free will we have. But most people, they don't use their free will, so therefore they live reactive lives. They don't live proactive lives. So reactive means this, whatever karma is playing on them, they just react accordingly.
Choice.
In other words, when we become a devotee, we can start to use the free will. Otherwise, most people don't use their free will. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.